we are the super nerdy Sailor Guardians who fight for love and justice. And this is Across the Mooniverse.
Hello, and welcome to Across the Mooniverse. My name is Maddie.
And I'm Mike.
And welcome, I am everybody. Very I excited for this episode. Happy Moon Day!
Happy Moon Day.
If our upload schedule is correct, this particular episode should come out in 2 weeks from when we're recording this, right? So.
Correct.
It'll come out just after Halloween.
Just after Halloween.
Which is pretty
good
so
timing for this episode.
Exactly.
Because today's episode is season one, episode 20, The Beach, the Summer, Youth, and Ghosts.
Would you like to know the original air date of this episode?
I would.
The original air date was on August 1st, 1992. So I was just barely 2 years old when this came out.
I was 22.
Not to reveal the age gap difference between us.
it's easy though, because 20 years is easy to do the math on.
True,
you know, having a 20-year age gap.
Yeah, it works out nicely.
I don't notice it though, because. You know, you have your musical knowledge is the same as mine, so it's like you were there.
You have to appreciate your music history. You got to know where you came from to know where you're gonna go.
Well, wasn't your mom a DJ?
Yes, my mom was a radio DJ for many years, and my stepmom was in a band, and I've just kind of been. I also live with. My parents are all trivia nerds. So anytime they had an opportunity to be like, Maddie, who sings this? Why is this significant? Who plays guitar on this song? Like, I absorbed a lot of information.
Yeah. Exactly.
All relevant that I use every single day.
Yeah. Well, it's relevant to me. It definitely helped form our friendship.
Yeah.
All right, I have 19 pages of notes. So
yes.
which like you said, is quite a bit for a filler episode.
We're not gonna
have any huge plot points revealed like that. Mamoru's tuxedo mask. But
no.
This is a fun episode, and I did some deep dives while I was watching it because I have the more I watch the show, the more questions I have about this show's portrayal of Japanese culture and assumptions that the show makes about Western culture. It just is interesting to me how the Japanese, you know, in their storytelling in their anime, they lean heavily on Western culture for tropes.
I mean,
you know?
there are a lot of really good tropes, but there are also like some tropes that. You know, we might think are Western culture, but might end up actually being, when you trace them all the way back, it's actually,
right.
You know, from whatever. I had no good example to follow that up on. I was just trying to make a point.
I'll bring it up when it comes up, some of the tropes all I noticed.
Right.
Because, so, just to talk about tropes, after you introducing me to Sailor Moon, I knew anime existed, and as I like to brag to you, I saw Akira at the USC, at a screening at USC for its American release, and Akira was the first, they called it Japanimation back. And Akira was one of the first movies released in America, and I remember seeing it and really being like blown away. I'd never seen animation like that before.
And if listeners, if you haven't ever seen Akira, I highly recommend just for the history of it. It's weird, but in a good way. He's weird.
Yeah. But I mean, I had no context. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what I mean? It wasn't like a Disney movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it was this futuristic dystopian, you know, motorcycle gangs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I had an appreciation for the genre, but after being introduced to Sailor Moon, and since my lifestyle has changed since moving to Seattle, where I have a lot more free time, mm-hmm. I really embraced anime. And one thing I noticed in anime is that shows that have female characters, they tend to have a beach episode. So this is no different, you know.
It's very slice of life animes that will have slice of life anime that'll have the beach episodes a lot of the time.
Right.
It's usually kooky fun. It's a common feature that makes its way into most D&D campaigns as well.
Like in High School of the Dead, it's set at a high school where the zombie virus has broken out, mm-hmm. and so the whole show is about these high schoolers who are trying to go from their school to safety, going through a town infested with zombies, and they somehow manage to make it to the beach.
Of course,
for one episode.
Yeah,
and the beach episodes tend to be non-linear. They tend to mm-hmm. not be part of the narrative structure of the show. It's a chance for the animators to relax their storytelling and just have a fun day at the beach. And this one's no different.
And usually you'll see in most series that have a beach episode, usually it happens like after a big story arc like closes or after, you know, whatever, because then it's like, oh, this is a palate cleanser. You guys have been through a lot. Here you go. And this is lighthearted and fun. Ha ha ha. Look, everyone's safe. All we're doing is, you know, cracking watermelons with bats and playing with friends. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah, because the last episode, a lot of big stuff happened.
Yeah.
We discovered Tuxedo Mask's identity. Sailor Moon and Tuxedo Mask had spent some time together.
Yeah.
At which time he reveals that he doesn't know why he comes to her rescue, but he feels that he knows her, you know, somewhere in his past. Naru, we don't know the status of Naru. Naru's a cliffhanger.
It's true.
You know, so here we are.
Answer at least one of those questions for you immediately.
Go ahead.
We know how Naru's doing, because at the beginning of this episode, they're all excited about going to the beach, our girls, and Usagi immediately wishes that Naru was there with them, implying that Naru has in some way recovered from her ordeal, and if were it not a serious training camp run by Luna, Naru would be there.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a super... They did so much training in this episode. Let me tell you. So much training.
I know, yeah. So it opens with they're at a seaside train station.
Mm-hmm.
Usagi, Rei, and Ami exit the train and look out across the ocean. And looking at the beach, and the sea breeze is so refreshing, and this place is nice. And Sailor Moon says, too bad Naru couldn't be with us. And then Luna pops out from a picnic basket and has to be the buzzkill. And she's like, you're not on vacation. This is a summer training camp.
How dare you? How dare you want to go have fun in the sun? This is serious business. That's why your other friend isn't here.
So my note right here is thank you, continuity. And so what I mean by that is that we were left with a cliffhanger about Naru's mm-hmm. condition, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they address it in this episode. And
they
I want to talk a little bit about the how this story is structured, okay?
Yeah.
In general, there's different types of TV shows. And this carries over into Japan, too. Japan has adopted some of these styles.
Oh, definitely.
You have your half-hour comedies, your sitcoms. Mm-hmm. We're all kind of familiar with that dynamic. And then you have your one-hour episodic dramas. So Sailor Moon is kind of a half-hour episodic drama. There's a main story that runs through that's pushing us along. Mm-hmm. Kind of compared to the X-Files. where we get set up with these characters in this setting where they work for the FBI, and they go and they investigate these paranormal incidents. But all the while, there's kind of this running story about, you know, the smoking man and this conspiracy to cover up these terrestrial events. And so, you know, sometimes in the X-Files, they'll just be investigating a single kind of one-off paranormal episode. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the episode will focus strictly on pushing the story forward about Mulder's investigation within the FBI, you know, who's, yeah. you know, who are the secret keepers and stuff like that. And so it's kind of the same with Sailor Moon. It's structured in that every episode kind of happens the same, you know, like
Monster of the Week.
It's also kind of like Pokemon in this way. It's, uh-huh. it's very simple. It's very simple. Here's how you sum up Pokemon. Every episode is relatively the same.
Mm-hmm.
You introduce a problem or a challenge. You discover a new monster. You catch it and use it to do battle, whose outcome resolves the problem or challenge. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much every episode. There's not much more to it.
Yeah. You
know, throughout an entire, I only watched Pokemon Black and White, so I only know this kind of story of Black and White, where they're on a new island, and
well,
it's got new monsters, and he has new friends. But I assume that everywhere he went, it was kind of the same.
I mean, as somebody who really the only Pokemon series anime-wise that I watched was the original, that's exactly how it goes.
So,
since the beginning, it's, oh no, what's our problem? Gosh, well, now we gotta go do this. Sometimes it'll be a two-parter.
So this is what I've determined is the structure for Sailor Moon. Amidst the life of an average 14-year-old schoolgirl, we notice someone or something is acting in a strange, unexpected way that causes the Sailor Scouts and or Luna to become concerned that the Dark Kingdom is plotting some new scheme against the people of Juban.
Mm-hmm.
They investigate leads, clues, evidence, and people of interest to solve the mystery of what's behind the out-of-the-ordinary events unfolding around them. They confront the source of the strange events, which leads to a Yoma materializing and attacking the Sailor Guardians,
mm-hmm.
who have uncovered the monster's role in increasing human victims' energy, and then collecting that energy, which is supposed to be given to Dark Kingdom's great leader. A battle ensues between the Yoma and whichever scared Sailor Guardians are present when the Yoma materializes. Sometimes Tuxedo Mask joins the fight. The victorious Guardians foil the efforts of the Dark Kingdom and restore order to those people and places and institutions and societal norms that have been disrupted and exploited and imperiled by evil forces. Each episode ends with the group's sense of well-being and normality being restored. Kind of what happened. Something goes wrong. Someone's acting weird. That weird person they find out is being influenced by a Yoma. The Yoma materializes and they fight it. That's kind of what happens in every episode.
And then almost always there's at least one daydream.
That's a characteristic of the narrative. But so in when I said thank you continuity, see if you're doing that, if you're just going to have each week be a new monster fight, there's no long-term story being told.
Yeah,
you know, we've already gone through a main character. We already had Jadeite come and go, you know, and now we're with Nephrite. And so it's an unfolding story about the Dark Kingdom's efforts and how the Sailor Guardians are reacting to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so with Naru being out, you know, injured and left incapacitated, you know, it's good to hear that they followed up with that.
Yeah,
and there's another piece. I'll just say it now. There's another piece of continuity that I love, which is that Usagi's swimsuit is the one from the modeling episode.
Yep, with the moth-eaten bows
on it. I love that. That's great. I mean, that's like real life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's in sitcoms they don't do that usually. You know, things will change. Like in that 70s show, who was dating who would change.
Yeah.
You know, and that would kind of tell you what season you were in. But from episode to episode, you really didn't rely that much on information from previous episodes to inform what was going on in the current episode. That is not the case with Sailor Moon. Sailor Moon has a more strict narrative structure. All right.
It's true.
So.
And can I tell you another little continuity thing that won't come up for a while, but it's not a spoiler. The scene where Usagi, this happens later in the episode, but the scene where Usagi takes the textbook from Ami is used in the first movie.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And when I watched it as a kid, I had no idea because this particular episode is not included in the original dub. They cut this out.
For the American audience?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Which makes sense. I mean, it's kind of... From the way that they edited things back in those days, it was very, you know, this is weird. American kids probably won't get it. Let's just get rid of it. It's a filler episode.
So when the voice actors who did the current dub, when they had to record this episode, they actually had to translate it. Someone had to actually translate it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the actual show has been translated many, many times, but when they did the new dub, there were, and included all of the episodes, there were some that were just new.
We're new. Okay. Understood.
New.
All right. So
there's
quotes
in the air.
So back to this train station.
Yes.
I've got a request for the intern. On the top of the train, the destination placard,
mm-hmm.
What is that kanji say? I'm curious where they are.
Let me ask the intern.
All right. I think the intern would have some fun with that. Because I assume it's the name of a real place. It's pertinent because this is the first time the episode has been set somewhere other than Juban.
True.
I'm calling it a seaside beach resort.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah. So,
I believe it's called their reservation is at a pension house.
Right, and of course, I immediately had to figure out what that was. it's a type of lodging. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wanted to ask you this.
Yes.
So this is the first time that they mentioned what season we're in. They're mm-hmm. saying it's summer. We didn't see, there was no end of school or anything like that. Does Juban have an official summer break?
Or is it significantly shorter than, basically Juban has like school kind of all year round and there are just more shorter like breaks in between certain things, but they do school a lot.
So summer vacation is different. It's not like, because when American kids go on summer vacation, the school year ends and summer marks the transition from one grade to the next. And I didn't know if that was the same in Juban.
Yeah, not quite. And also, typically, because your summer break is shorter, you're typically assigned homework during the summer.
Okay. So Sailor Moon asked Ray, how far away is the pension you booked, Ray? And so I was like, what's a pension? And we'll get there when they get to the pension, we'll talk a little bit about lodging.
Okay.
Usagi tells Ray she expects the hotel to be a really nice, swanky resort. You know, and then that made me wonder, who's paying for all this? You know, for this training mission, you know, if it's not a vacation, who's footing the bill? Because it's pretty expensive for some 14-year-olds.
Yeah, you know? It sounds like maybe Ray has it covered with something.
Yeah, but we're talking about you got to transport everybody. You got to get train tickets. You got to pay for lodging. You got to pay for food and lodging. Although we'll talk about that too, because the food is included in this type of lodging. Which is common with pensions, from what I understand.
It's true, but it's all food, not just because like a bed and breakfast that only does breakfasts.
Right.
Yeah.
Pensions do two meals is what I learned.
I have it that they do breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and sometimes tea.
Yeah, the tea and hot water is usually available.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We're not there yet. We haven't gotten to the pension yet. What we're at right now is you saw these expectations about what the pension is going to be like.
Yeah.
And then so Ray looks at the brochure and she says, well, I think it is. It says, blue seas surround you as yachts go gliding by. From our luxurious pension house, you can view a beautiful sunset over our gleaming private beach. Usagi, giggling with short, excited breaths, repeats, our own private beach.
Yeah.
And then she goes into a fantasy sequence where
at least one daydream.
healthy, tanned young men dressed only in their swim trunks, surrounding Usagi as she lays reclined in a beach chair, smiling while staring at the guys behind mirrored sunglasses. And the sunglasses have little white wings on sides of each lens. I thought that was really
adorable.
Nice touch. Yeah. Motoki waves a fruity umbrella drink under her nose. She sits up and her glasses fly off when she spots tuxedo mask windsurfing on the ocean in front of her. Her eyes pop out as throbbing hearts.
The windsurfing is probably my favorite moment.
I know. She says, I can't wait. This is what I'm talking about. Being young at the beach during summer break. And she snaps out of it and runs up to catch up with Ami, Ray, and Luna, who are far up ahead walking into a wooded area.
You know, as you do.
And so then we cut to a few clouds floating in front of the sun. And Ray and Usagi are arguing about why it's taking so long to get to the hospital. Suddenly, dark clouds roll in, causing the forest to get nearly black. Thunder. Looks like it's really going to come down on us. Lightning flashes. We better get going. Usagi runs and cries that she's really afraid of thunder, which I think is funny because thunder isn't dangerous.
No,
lightning,
but it's loud
is.
And scary.
But it's not dangerous. Nobody got hurt by thunder.
I mean, maybe I did.
You know what I'm saying.
Well, you know what I've heard about thunder?
What?
Is that it only happens when it's raining. It
happens when it's raining?
Yeah.
And players only love you when they're playing.
I've heard that.
Women, they will come and they will go. All right, enough.
We could go on, but we're not going to.
Yeah, I could sing All of Dreams by Fleetwood Mac from beginning to end, so we don't need to do that. Usagi screams and falls down after seeing a small girl about half as tall as Ray hiding behind a tree, her huge eyes lit up by the lightning as she stands motionless holding some purple and orange flowers. Ray says, "Who's there?" And the rain starts pouring down. The gang follows the little girl into the forest and up a steep hill towards the outline of a large building sitting atop an oceanside rocky prominence.
Can I make an observation that really filled me with so much joy?
Yeah.
Every single time there's a thundercrack as they're walking across this little bridge to the promontory, is what it's called?
Promontory, yep.
Yeah. A point of high land that juts out into a large body of water.
I had to look that up too, yep.
We did definitions today. Anyways, Sailor Moon, Usagi, her little feet go all scrambly.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Like, I'm like, I love you, Usagi. You're so goofy.
So at the top of the promontory, it reveals a Gothic Revival style with pointed spires atop steep turrets along the pension's perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
I love that it's the sign says atoms.
yeah, maybe
I like Adam's family. Adam's family, exactly. Yeah.
And I love that. Then Ray's like, "This is where we have our reservation."
Right, and I love that it's so Gothic Revival. For those of you who are not familiar with the architecture, you're a little familiar with the architecture.
Yeah, Masa Minos.
everybody kind of knows what gothic means. You know what I mean? It's dark. It's got those sharp pointed spires, stuff like that. And it was very common in the United States, gothic revival. What I learned was it was not very common in Japan at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's really only one example of gothic revival, and that's the Asada Auditorium on the Hongo campus of University of Tokyo, which was built in 1925. They chose the red brick gothic style building in the wake of the 1923 Great Kanto earthquake. So we just see there's like earthquakes can be very interesting in terms of influencing architectural styles, because when you have a bunch of buildings fall down, then they're all built at the same time, you'll get that architectural style will become more prominent. This happened in San Francisco. After the Great San Francisco quake, they rebuilt everything in the Victorian style. That's why San Francisco has so many Victorian houses.
Hmm. All right.
However, in this case, Gothic revival did not catch on in Japan.
I mean, all right.
But I mean, so I'm being like a scholarly about the fact that they're using a Western trope to kind of hint at the building being creepy.
Yeah,
this pension is looking more like a haunted house.
Well, it's also very if you think about it, it's very like Dracula Transylvania sort of vibes,
right.
Too.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dracula's castle is also gothic revival.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes perfect sense.
Blech.
And I love that all the way down to the gargoyle door knocker. I love it so much.
I have to say something about the door knocker because this is, especially since it's around Halloween. My bio mom has had this Halloween door knocker since I was a little kid. And it's like, you can't really put it up on the door and make it functional because it's made out of plastic. But it has this little button when you do the knocker and it's like a creepy pumpkin and the door knocker is in its mouth. And it goes, when you hit the button, it goes, beware. Doom, 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 doom. Welcome. And seeing that gothic, like, gargoyle door knocker, I was just like, oh. My mom sends me a video of that same door knocker every single year on Halloween.
So this is what I learned about lodging. Right.
Yeah.
So, basically, you have kind of three categories. You have business hotels or hotels. You have pensions and you have hostels.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I learned: hotels run from about 50 to 300 a night per person. Pensions run from 40 to 150 a night per person. Hostels are about 30 to 100 per night per person. But hostels would be kind of a limited option at beaches. You wouldn't really find hostels at beaches.
Yeah.
So the features of a pension are they're usually family run. You get a single room, TV set, and a heater. You have shared toilets and bathrooms. Towels are provided in guest rooms, and guests must carry the towel with them when using the bath. Toothpaste and facial soap are available at the communal sink. Three meals served with seasonal local ingredients. Hot water and tea bags are available. And because it's family run, guests shouldn't expect 24-hour service. That's kind of what they're dealing with a pension. So that sounds about right.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. So it's almost kind of like a bed and breakfast that has three meals instead of just one.
Yeah. So the intern has come back with an answer to your previous query.
Okay.
Yes. So the train, the title on the train that you see says Kagawa-go, and that is a prefecture.
Okay, it must be coastal.
Yeah, yeah, and okay. So it's a prefecture in Japan. So Tokyo is like its own prefecture, and I'm looking at a map here, basically, but. When I was in Japan, I went into Tokyo, and then I also went down to Osaka and Hiroshima. which are like more south. Kagawa is like across a little. It's across a little body of water. It's like a little island in outside of the main island of Japan. So, yeah, they're quite a ways away from Juban. Oh. Yeah, it's a couple hours.
Couple hours, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lengthy, kind of a bold outing for for a 14-year-old girl. With no, there's no chaperone. Unless, well, I mean, and we don't know how Luna is. How old is Luna?
in human years or cat years?
Either.
She is old enough to know better.
But when Usagi's parents consider Luna a valid chaperone for their 14-year-old daughter?
Yes. I mean, okay, yes.
Is Ray 16?
No, they're all the same age.
They're all 14. Ray is actually older. Okay.
Yes. She goes to a private, like, Catholic girls' school, all that stuff. You know, you kind of end up acting a little older.
She is more mature. I mean, she's a Miko. So, you know, that's a lot of responsibility for you.
Yeah, she has a lot of responsibility and a lot of religious education.
Right. We'll get into that, too. That was another one of my deep dives. All right. So, they use the door knocker. The door opens, and we get, welcome, welcome, welcome. Three welcomes.
It's
from a female vampire, a short male wolfman, and a short male Frankenstein's monster. I want to be clear, he's not Frankenstein. When people say that's Frankenstein, it's not. Dr. Victor Frankenstein was just a regular human. Frankenstein is the doctor. Frankenstein's monster is the one that people dress up as at Halloween.
But arguably, Frankenstein is a monster, just not the monster in the story.
Right. I got you. Yeah, not the one that the one that everybody thinks.
Yes.
But yeah,
he is a monster, but not the monster.
Yeah, technically, Frankenberries have it wrong. They should be called Frankenstein's monster berries.
But maybe Frankenberry is. I mean, obviously, Count Chocula is not Dracula.
That's true.
Yeah. So there you go.
But I mean, the argument could be made that Frankenstein's monster is actually Frankenstein, but I don't think that Dr. Frankenstein adopted him and gave him his surname. You know what I mean? And the monster's never named, as far as I know.
Well, for the sake of this episode, we're going to call him Frank.
Okay. Sounds good.
They never get names. These spooky ooky monsters that greet us when they open the door never get named.
Yeah. And in the dub, they refer to the female vampire as the owner of the pension.
They do in the sub as well. They do mention that she is the owner, which will come up later.
Right.
On why they say that.
That's confusing. That's confusing, though, because in a minute we'll meet the flower girl. We find out that her name. Find out her name is Sakiko.
Because Sakiko.
The hotel staff welcome her back home.
Yeah,
they're like, welcome back, Miss Sakiko.
And they say they're like, welcome.
And so it's like, I was like, why is the hotel staff dressed up for Halloween? It's just
why the heck not? Because it's a spooky pension.
Sakiko kind of quietly and obediently goes and reports to her father.
Yeah.
His father questions where she was, and he tells her, get over here.
And he's spooky. He's got spooky vibes, but not quite vampire vibes. He's got more he's got like evil wizard vibes.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, evil wizard. That's kind of the vibe he's giving off.
He's giving Saruman from Lord of the Rings.
Rasputin.
Rasputin. Now, specifically Rasputin from Anastasia?
No, I was thinking of the one who worked for the Tsar.
I mean, technically the same person, because Rasputin from Anastasia was...
Right.
I'm
Anastasia
just thinking...
was the youngest daughter.
Yeah.
Rasputin, Rasputin was from the Tsar's court. Yes.
Yes. Rasputin, lover of the Russian queen.
Yeah. All right. So we saw you drying her hair in her room, and she plops down and says she's exhausted and hungry.
Which coincidentally, I sent you a meme last week that had that exact same shot. It was like when people ask me how I'm doing, I'm tired and hungry. Like, yep, that's me.
Yeah, Usagi tells Luna that she thinks the staff is creepy. Mm-hmm. And she says, what if this place is haunted? Maybe we should leave. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the vampire lady appears. And then all she does is change a light bulb.
Yeah. She's like, excuse me, it's dark out here. And then she invites them to dinner. She's like, oh, by the way, dinner's ready.
And this leads to Rei and Usagi yelling at each other because Rei is telling her to settle down.
Yeah.
And Usagi is getting spooked at everything that happens in this place.
I mean, that's our girl. She's just a spooky cat. Spooky cat, I mean scaredy cat. She's a scaredy cat.
So the father says, Tsuchiko, don't you go getting involved with such foolish girls.
Yeah, because they're looking, Tsuchiko and her father are looking at the girl's fight through another window.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's just like, they're so noisy.
Yeah. That's all I'm thinking is, well, you run a bed and breakfast, dude. You have hotel guests.
He's like, they're so loud. And she's like, well, they seem nice. He's like, no, they're not nice. Don't you ever go talk to them because they're not nice and you shouldn't be friends with people.
Poor Tsuchiko.
I know. Give her a hug.
I love that to make her seem more innocent, she's always carrying a little bouquet of flowers.
Yes, and then depending on how far away the shot is, it's either one solid color or multiple colors.
Right.
Because if it's close up, multiple colors, you got to put the detail in those flowers. If it's far away, one solid color.
Far
I'm
away,
not going to waste
purple.
Time on that.
They're purple. They're purple in the long shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. Everybody's chowing down, and then Frank rolls in with a cart full of food. Mm-hmm. Says, "Anyone want seconds?" And his creepy creepy delivery spooks Usagi.
Yeah.
And she declines, which is really uncharacteristic of her. That tells you how scared she is.
No, I'm full. Thank you. I'm full. What? Who are you? What have you done with Usagi? No.
Usagi, clearly frightened and frustrated, asks Rei why they booked this pension. And Rei says, isn't it obvious? Because it was cheap.
It was cheap.
And then Ami, always the peacemaker. Ami,
of course.
She says, well, nevertheless, the food's great, and I like the costumes the staff wears. And one of the staff members says, thank
it's our
you.
Selling point.
It's our selling point, exactly.
Thank you. We try. They're like, feel it, dude. You may not have a lot of customers, but that's okay. You get the spirit.
And then
and the spirit
all of a sudden,
dumb, because you had to put that Wolfman outfit on every day.
Exactly. Nice one. Everybody hears a wailing sound, kind of a... Somebody says, that must be the owner weeping.
And then the owner pops in from nowhere.
And says, no, that isn't me. He says that she's her only parent. So he's not married to the vampire lady.
No, he is not. So presumably something happened to her father or her mom in the past. Pardon me.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can. I don't know if you can see my camera.
Yeah, I see what's going on. Yeah.
So you know, this is where we're at right now.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. So the vampire lady says, "No, that isn't me." And then Rei senses something, throws open a door so everyone can see a specter like wispy white smoke shaped in the head, floating slowly through the hallway and up the stairs. And Usagi says, did you all see that? And the staff has their back turned, and they deny seeing anything.
We don't see anything. What are you talking about? No.
Ami asks Rei if she thinks it's a monster. And Rei says, no, she's not sensing that there's any monsters here, but she did sense some kind of incredible power.
Yeah. And, you know, we trust Rei in that assessment.
All right. So that brings me to my next deep dive and discussion about Rei. So Rei doesn't detect any monsters. Now, this is because she's psychic, not because she's a Miko. And a Miko is a Shinto temple priestess.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't realize that she was actually a priestess until I dug into it.
Oh, yeah.
It's more than an altar boy. It's a more involved kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
She has a very specific duties.
Yes.
I learned that in the past, in ancient times, Miko acted as mediums to communicate the divine will or a message of a spirit or a kami, which a kami is deity, spirits, natural or supernatural forces in the Shinto religion.
Mm-hmm.
So Miko were mediums, and they would communicate between the kami and the human world.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't have anything to do with her ability to sense monsters. Those are two separate things.
Yeah, she's psychic on top of being very spiritual and
having
those abilities too, which makes her a good Miko. So hooray!
Right, but not all Mikos have that ability.
No.
So, just to be clear on that.
Yes.
If it's not a monster, if it's just a ghost, it would still be different because ghosts and kami are different.
Yes.
Kami are spirits, oftentimes spirits of it could be the spirit of an entire clan. You know what I mean? That they're acting as a medium for it. So it's just kind of a force of spiritual energy, as opposed to an individual entity.
Indeed.
So, what happens next?
Next. Ooh. So, next we cut to Sakiko and her father.
Yep.
And her father is currently hypnotizing her for some undisclosed reason.
Right.
At this point, and hold on, I dropped my notes. Situating cat, hold on.
Okay, I'll help you out here.
Sorry.
No problem.
No, I'm back. Okay.
So,
her father is hypnotizing her for some undisclosed reason. He's telling her to focus and fall deeper and deeper into sleep. And we see a close-up on Sakiko right before it fades to black, cuts out, and she's crying.
Yeah.
And so whatever is happening in this hypnotization, she's not happy about it.
So we see that the father is dangling the coin which we all take that to mean hypnotizing.
Yeah.
And he just keeps saying, good girl.
Sleep.
Good girl. Good girl. Over and over again, right? In a really kind of monotone voice. And all I could think of was, I don't know if you had ever did sports when you were younger, but at the end of the sporting match, you would have to line up.
Good game.
Good game. That's all I could think of. Good game. There's an awesome scene of that in the movie Dazed and Confused. It's so well done. when the little kid, who's being terrorized by Ben Affleck, he's pitching the baseball game, and he's trying to get out of there early so he doesn't get caught by Ben Affleck, but he's forced to stay on the field and wish everyone a good game. Good game. And you don't mean it because you either defeated the team that you're saying good game to, in which case it's just kind of a consolation, like, yeah, nice try. Or if you're the losing team and you're saying good game, you don't mean it either because you got your ass kicked.
It's all about good sportsmanship. Yeah. You want to make sure that everyone is happy and that, you know, you're not bitter about losing.
Somebody should have told that to Jude McDonough, because one time when we were doing that in hockey, he used it as an opportunity to punch and start a fight with one of the kids that he almost started a fight with during the hockey game.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, to his credit, that's a good time to do it because our helmets and gloves were off at that time, so he could do more damage. Hockey fights are kind of funny because you're so padded up, you can't really do that much damage.
But, man, is there a lot of blood in hockey? I remember being in soccer and doing the good game and whatnot, but my team sucked, so we never won. And well, my sister's team, because she was playing soccer at the same time as me, her team won quite a bit, so she had like several little trophies and whatnot. And I remember just being so defeated because, one, I'm not a sports kid. I was living in San Antonio. I was a stick thin, tiny, asthmatic child who was trying to run up and down the field in 100 degree weather. It didn't work out for me. So I was one of those kids that I was so sad that I never won that I cried to my parents. I was like, I just want a trophy sometime in my life. I don't understand. And my parents went and got me a star trophy.
Yeah, that's good parenting right there. All right. This episode is going to last forever.
It's true.
Buckle down. All right. Yes. So we come back from the commercial break. It's Yippee fun at the beach. And that's when I noticed Usagi's swimsuit.
Yay!
The same one for the modeling episode. Yay, continuity.
Yay.
All right. So they're having a good time at the beach, but something's missing.
Mm.
And Usagi says, where are the yachts and the hot boys? And Ray says to Luna, can I bury her in the sand?
And Usagi's like, I am so disappointed. This private beach is really, really private because it's only big enough for the three of us and Luna.
For the three of us, yeah.
And then she says, but I'm going to make the most of it. I don't care about false advertising. I'm going to have fun.
Yeah. And you notice that there is no training going on. They're all just lounging at the beach.
I think Luna kind of after spookiness was just like, all right, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah. At this point, Ami notices that they didn't see Sachiko come out of her room this morning.
Yeah.
And then Ray says, wait, hold on, Ami. Did you bring some of your textbooks to the beach?
She's like, yeah, why wouldn't I? I love studying.
And then what does Usagi say to Ami?
She says, no studying on vacation, because while studying is important, she says, studying is important, but I think it's just as important to have fun and make some memories. And then Ray says to Luna, oh, God, Usagi's being logical for once. What is happening?
Yeah. And that causes Ami to give in.
Yeah.
And they all play with the beach ball.
And then we learn Usagi is not good at catching, which we kind of already knew. It's more like beach dodgeball.
Exactly.
And Ray and Ami are on the other team.
Usagi's it.
Yeah.
All right. So then we cut to a sad little Sachiko watching the girls from atop a cliff overlooking the beach.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the Wolfman bellhop, who's perched on top of the pension roof, howling at the moon.
Ow-hoo!
And he says, nighttime has come again. I'm scared.
And here's the question. If it's just a costume, why is he on the roof?
Exactly.
He's dedicated.
Yeah, he definitely is. He definitely gets into it. That's cosplay plus. So then we see Ray is exercising in the dining room with no food in, which are those little strips of paper.
Yes. She says, Akrio Taisan, Akrio Taisan, which is her
it's kind of a ward. She's kind of setting up a ward to keep the dining room safe from evil spirits.
Exactly.
And then Ami notices Sachiko all alone staring at the ocean. And
Oh, wait. You missed one other thing with Ray in the dining room. She overhears some talking in the other room, and she peeks in, and she sees our vampire owner, our wolfman bellhop, and our Frankenstein's monster, Frank, hatching some sort of plan or planning something. And
yeah,
she overhears
right.
them and is like, and they're like, we should do it. We should just do it. We should just go through with it. But we can't let those girls know.
So Ray notices that there's something afoot, and they're trying to keep it from the guests.
Yeah. And she's like,
Yeah.
And then we cut to Ami finding Sakiko looking very sad on the cliff that she was at earlier that day.
Yeah. And Ami says hi. And then Sakiko IDs the whole gang. She calls Ray the mature one and Luna the cat and stuff like that. And Ami's like, how did you know my name?
It's just, I was watching you all day.
Right.
But that doesn't tell her
the names. She obviously picked up the names because she has some psychic powers herself.
So clearly.
That's what I took from that. And so Ami asks her if she has any friends, and she says no. And Ami says that, you know, I used to be kind of a loner myself. Mm-hmm. But things have changed since I met Usagi.
Yeah. And she said, you should be friends with Usagi because she makes everyone feel very happy.
I like that. I like that a lot. I wish I was known for that. You know,
same.
You should become friends with Hollywood Mike because I don't think I make everyone very happy, though. I don't think that's the truth.
You make me happy.
Oh, thank you. So Chico is kind of encouraged by this, and then all of a sudden her father shows up. So Chico, how many times have I told you not to talk to strangers? And he grabs Chico's hand and says to Ami, I suggest you girls leave this place right away. That is, unless you want something really terrifying to happen.
Yeah, he straight up threatens her. And I'm like, excuse me, do you know who she is? Excuse me.
Yep.
This is Ami. She doesn't mess around. Okay.
Yeah. But he, you know, he just wants to. He just doesn't want Sakiko distracted.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want the noisy girls there anymore. He's had enough of them.
Yeah.
So he drags Sakiko away, and she's like, "But Father, Ami and her friends are really nice." And she says that we should all be friends. And her father tells her that she has great psychic powers, and that he wants to help her learn to control these powers with hypnosis.
Yeah.
Then he hypnotizes her. He's going to show everyone who ever doubted them. And she's going to become the world's leading psychic.
Turns out Dad is an emotionally abusive asshole who is using his daughter for revenge.
Yeah.
Gross.
It's his own bruised ego that's on the line.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And so, you know, who cares if my daughter cries? I'm going to show them.
It's kind of like, they laughed at me at the university. I'll show them.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So then Usagi stumbles upon the hotel staff, worshiping a shrine of candles, pumpkin, two carrots, and two radishes.
Yeah. They're doing something, and it's weird, and Usagi is terrified.
So the Wolfman and Frank are worshiping this altar that they've created. And in the dub version, it's great. This is what I have to do. I'm going to do the whole routine.
Okay.
This is what they say. Jibba jabba jibber joe. Eeny meeny miny mo. Gotta grabba gotta go. Peta meta tiny toe. Jibba jabba jibber joe.
I mean, of course. Everybody knows that spell.
And they just keep chanting that over and over again. Usagi screams. She clutches Ray. And she says, see, these people are all monsters. And Ray says, calm down. These are all normal people. But what's more important is there's an incredible force generated in this place.
Yeah.
And then Ray kind of gets a look on her face, like she senses something. And she says, something is coming. And at that point, the wind blows through a slice and slices the Okuda, dining room tables start to vibrate. They fly up in the air and begin swirling around. We cut to the father saying, cut to father who has hypnotized her now, got her under his spell. Now, use your psychic powers to create a ghost.
And?
I have an issue. I know, we have to stop right here. I got an issue with this. That's not how ghosts work.
No. Okay. Well, I mean, okay. Actually, this is a special interest of mine. It is technically how poltergeists work, because poltergeists, per definition, are the manifestation of energy, typically from an adolescent, that is manifesting outside of their body. So if they are going through some like emotional turmoil or a bad home life or whatever, and they can't let that out, that energy does have the potential to come out as a separate entity causing issues in the house. Does it have a corporeal form? No. Or no, well, not none of ghosts. No ghosts have corporeal forms. That was the wrong word. Does it have a visible form that you can see? Not really. But it does cause things like for something to get thrown across the room or knocked off of shelf or stuff like that. So technically, poltergeists work like that. So.
Well, in the movie Poltergeist, you can actually see them. You know, they're not solid entities. They don't materialize into this world. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like spirits that are halfway in this world and you know, halfway somewhere else. But that's a good answer to my question, because these were my thoughts about entities, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wrote, ghosts aren't created. They're the spirits of dead people who haunt places of significance for when they were alive. Spirits can be channeled. Yoma can be summoned. Demons can be summoned. Ghouls and goblins can be sent from another dimension into the material world. So, and I just wrote, hypnotism is suggestion. It nudges behavior that's already there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Hypnotism doesn't grant you the ability to create a ghost.
No.
It's a flawed premise. We'll just leave it at that.
It is, yes. I could, just so everyone is aware, I could do an entire episode I could do an entire podcast just about gushing about ghosts. So... It's aside from Sailor Moon and, video games, paranormal entities are one of my special interests. So you agree
that this is a flawed premise. There isn't some kind of cultural, background where ghosts are created through hypnotism. It's just for the purpose of this story of the overbearing father, forcing his girl, his daughter to do something against her will. They chose this. Okay. Very good.
And I mean, you could technically do some sort of astral projection shit and leave your body in that way, but that's clearly not what's happening.
But you wouldn't have to be under the influence of hypnosis to do that.
It's true. Well, yeah, I mean, so. You might. It would definitely help because it'd put you in a more suggestive state and have that ability to be a little more open to that if you buy into that stuff.
Fair enough.
But, I mean, as far as the entity that we experience in this episode, I would definitely qualify it as a poltergeist since it's technically a manifestation of her negative emotions towards her father.
Definitely.
I've written research papers on this because I'm a fucking nerd.
See, good. I'm talking to the right person. Do you agree with me? So in the end, we can just say that in this episode, the main idea of the narrative is a flawed premise.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Not that magical girls is necessarily a premise that can exist in this world, but anyways, that's not why we're here. We're here to love.
It has its own lore. There's really no precedence in horror fiction for hypnotism leading to the creation of ghosts.
That's fair.
Now, one could argue that there is now that this episode has come out, they've been established a precedent.
Yeah.
But, I don't know that Sailor Moon could be used like a Supreme Court case.
No, probably not. But for the premise of this argument here, the ability to summon ghosts with hypnosis has been a premise since August 1st, 1992.
Very good. Very good. All right. So this brings us to the fight. We can go through this pretty quick. It's a pretty standard fight.
Oh, yeah.
Chiquita blasts Tommy outside the windows. Ghost lies by the dining room and guests and knocks the father outside. Ghost chases after the father. Mm-hmm. Tommy and Ray and Usagi transform. MTA doesn't work.
No, because you can't use a tiara on non-corporeal entities.
Exactly.
Don't work. They're non-corporeal.
Mars and
can't
Moon
touch them.
Mars and Moon get knocked into the bushes. The father tells Chiquita the ghost is too powerful. And at that point, the father apologizes to Chiquita for forcing her to use her psychic powers. Chiquita yells, "Go away," to the ghost, and the ghost disappears. So that's the whole fight.
Pretty much. And, the fact that Ami or Sailor Mercury says after Mars and Moon get knocked into the bushes, she's just like, "So Kiko's will to disobey her father has become so strong that it's become uncontrollable." imagine if he did this when she was like a teenager. Her will to disobey her father. Good Lord.
I think Ami's a little impressed because it would never occur to Ami to disobey her parents.
It's true. She'd be like, "What? No, I love my mom."
And this would just reinforce that. Be like, "See what happens when you disobey?
You summon ghosts while you're hypnotized."
So that's the fight. The Sailor Guardians all transform, but for really no reason. All it took was the father to apologize to his daughter.
And one little girl to believe in herself.
That's right. Mm-hmm. All right, so the ghost disappeared.
In a way, Sakiko was Sailor Moon, and her father, in a way, was Tuxedo Mask, instilling hope in her.
So that was my next question was this. So when Sailor Moon transformed to fight the ghost, what happened to Tuxedo Mask? Did Mamoru take a knee and have the rainbow spaghetti hit him, and he transformed into Tuxedo Mask, but didn't know where to go. He'd have to get on a train. He'll be there in a couple hours. He probably.
I want a cutaway in after credits where it's just Tuxedo Mask sitting
on a train
on a bullet train going, "Well, hope they're still around." and then an hour in, the transformation just goes away. because they're out of danger. And so he's just like, "Where am I?"
Because we never see it fade. We never see them transform back into regular girls. Maybe you don't have to tell me. I doubt we'll ever see it. There's probably a detail that will always be left to our imaginations.
What, them de-transforming?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, is what I'm going to say. Maybe.
All right. So the ghost is defeated. Mm-hmm. They never really had to transform in the first place, although it probably gave them some defensive skills.
Yeah. It makes them look cool. It makes them feel special.
Right.
It was technically part of the training camp.
There you go.
Yeah.
But they failed miserably. Ray and Ami, Mars and Mercury didn't even cast a spell.
No, they didn't. Ray did some psychic stuff, so I guess
she did. Yeah,
Ami brought a textbook. It's fine.
But Ray did that as Ray, not as Sailor Mars.
Listen, I'm trying. This is probably what Luna's doing too. You know what? Probably. Who paid for this is probably the mysterious organization that Luna is reporting to.
Yeah.
And so she had to, when she was filling out the expense report, she had to, justify it in some way.
Yeah.
And so she was like, "Yeah, and Sailor Marge did this, and it was really helpful, and there was a ghost, and they really fought hard."
Justifying the expense report.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect. I'll buy that. All right. So that leaves with Usagi asking, so what were the staff doing before? And Rei says they were probably performing an exorcism to get rid of the ghost.
Usagi
said, I know that. All right. And then we cut to the girls playing ball with Sachiko. Mm-hmm. And the staff says to the father, are you sure the ghosts are gone? We like working here, but ghosts and monsters scare us the most.
We are actually super afraid of those things that we dress up as on a regular basis.
That's probably quite true.
That's kind of where it ends. It's there.
Yep.
And it's
the father says, don't worry, you won't see them here ever again. And then it cuts to an audio track of the girls giggling over a freeze frame with the Sailor Scouts, Sachiko and Luna playing on the beach.
After Usagi is the only person on her dodgeball team one more time.
It's really cute because Sachiko's laughing and Usagi's like, oh, Sachiko, you think it's funny, huh?
It's like, I'll show you.
You know, which just goes to show that Sachiko has been included in their little group of friends. And, you know, she can look forward to having friends in the future.
And you know they're going to keep in contact. That's who Usagi is. She's like, oh, yeah, I've met you for 10 minutes. You are now my friend. Hello.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's who she is.
Perfect. All right. And then the only other detail is next week, the Sailor Guardians visit an animation studio.
Ooh, so exciting. This is another one of those episodes that I'm not quite familiar with. There's like a good chunk in between in the Nephrite arc that I'm not as familiar with because I didn't have the VHS. And there were a lot of these episodes that were cut out, too. So
cool.
It's pretty exciting. It's like I've only seen a couple of episodes that I've only seen a handful of times. And so it's going to be an adventure being able to re-experience them and get your insights and all that stuff. I'm very excited.
All right.
Yay.
You want to talk about social media?
Heck yes. Okay. So as you guys know, we do have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/AcrossTheMooniverse. Mike is currently in charge of updating that and he's doing a wonderful job. My notifications are blowing up and it's cool. So yeah, we're definitely down to interact with y'all in on that forum. We also do X. I'm in charge of that, which means that it's usually a lot more quiet because I suck, but not really. But we encourage you guys to interact with us wherever you can using the hashtag MooniCast. That's MOONIE cast. And of course, you can always go to our website where we have every episode posted. And that's acrossthemooniverse.castos.com. And we try to be consistent with our every other Monday fun times.
Yeah,
we don't always succeed, but we'll still keep trying.
We're doing better.
Yes.
I just want to wish everyone a very happy Moon Day, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks.
Happy Moon Day. See you all soon, and happy belated Halloween. Yay! Bye, everyone.